So what would your Pure Land, what would your Pure Land be like? What?
I think as a group we had something like a sangha in nature or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. A sangha in a natural place, like a weekend retreat, it sounds like. Anything else?
Yeah, for three of us, we said it's here.
Oh, there
yeah,
he is.
Yeah, you don't need to go anywhere else.
Yeah, especially when you have a shrine by Tarabaranya.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, so this is your life.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so your own life can be a Pure
yeah,
Land.
Yeah,
that's the best outcome if you can to make that happen, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Yeah, we said it was going to be vegan.
Oh.
Vegan place.
A vegan
place. And we don't have to lock up anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
We don't have keys because our houses are like open and
yes.
You don't have to lock up your bicycle or anything. Mm-hmm. And people can pop in if they're a bit thirsty, but they pop in, have a drink,
yes.
Wash up the mug, and everything's fine. Yeah, you don't have to worry.
So there's no washing up that you have to do in your field. Anything else?
Not having to make a living.
Not having to make a living, not having to work to make a living. So you can just
follow
enjoy yourself.
Follow
your inclinations.
Follow
your inclinations. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, not having to strive for money. To keep going.
We were reflecting here on about the actual, it's the internal state of bliss that is significant.
Yes.
So actually the external conditions not so.
Yeah.
Didn't seem to be so significant.
Yes. Yeah, but the idea with the Pure Land is that your external conditions do have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can set up external conditions, like being with a sangha in nature or something, you may find that that does at least make it a little bit easier for you. But as you gain in spiritual maturity, you'll find that robustness that allows you to be in a good mental state even in bad conditions remains, and then there's the Pure Land for you is there. Yeah. Any last suggestions? Okay.
Offer us beauty in the arts.
Beauty in the arts
water
being present.
In
yes.
The sun.
Yeah. Was that water? Did you say?
Water is an important part.
Yes.
Of
yeah. So maybe that's why that visualization starts with the water. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, that isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that particular choice, the water and the setting sun. Okay, so what the Buddha describes is a beautiful visualization meditation of a beautiful ideal place, at least, you know, within the ideas of the time. But before he describes the meditation, he describes the three meritorious acts. So it's not that he's... this is what makes it non-escapist. He's saying you do actually need to work on yourself. You need to generate that state of mind. You need to generate it not just through the meditation, but even through the way you live, through your ethics, through your developing an open heart, a compassionate heart, and through going for refuge, through committing yourself to the path and not just sort of wandering about. So you've got a standard Buddhist path in there. All these things in the path you would recognize from other Buddhist teachings. So it's not a question of asking a god to save you. It's true that in these sutras they have a big cosmic Buddha. So they're the most religious of all the bits of Buddhism, you could say, Pure Land Buddhism. And some people mistake them as if they were theistic. But this cosmic Buddha is not a creator of the universe or a judge of the dead or a ruler or anything like that. He's just vast enlightenment. He's the big mind, as they say in Zen. And they lead, the three preliminary meritorious acts lead to a meditation which leads on to insight. But that sequence goes the other way as well, because the meditation feeds back into your ethical life. As if you do the Metta-Bhavana meditation, visualizing lots and lots of people that you're sending love out to, that'll tend to make you treat people better if you do it properly. And the same goes for the meditation on Amida, and his Pure Land. It's not just a fantasy, it has an effect, and it gets you to act differently as well, as we'll see later on. So what is this meditation? Well, if you were here for the first part, you'll know how it starts. You sit in meditation in the open air, facing west, preferably in Cornwall or Wales, or, as I remember, on the Isle of Skye. Where are you thinking of?
Crete.
On Crete, yeah, on the west coast of Crete, but somewhere where you can see the sun setting. Yeah, on the island of Skye, I remember, where you can look right over the Atlantic, there's nothing between you and America, and there's the sun setting. It's fantastic, tremendously beautiful. And the sun is the symbol of Amida. The sun is the symbol of Amida, especially the setting sun. Now, as it becomes red, it's more and more gentle on the eye. It's not dazzling and fierce. It's a very welcoming and warm red colour, and it spreads over those rippling waters like a pathway to the western horizon. And the sutra says the drum, the sun is like a drum suspended in the sky, like a great drum suspended in the sky. And as the sun sinks below the horizon, that's when your eyelids sink closed, and you've left the world of the senses. You've entered an inner world of visions of beauty. And you stay with the feeling of the ocean, of this vast, still sea extending all around. And then you imagine that it's so still that it becomes like ice. And then you see the ice becoming deeper and deeper blue, as if it's made of the stone lapis lazuli. And I looked around for an example of lapis lazuli, but I couldn't find one here. But if you look at Tara Karenia's mandala painting outside, the deep blue one, that is the colour of lapis lazuli. Lapis lazuli is one of the most beautiful of all stones, because that lovely blue, deep blue colour, and then those little tiny flecks of iron pyrites, which look like gold in it. So do have a look. I asked Tara Karenia about this, and he said, if you go down to the Church Street Market and go to one of the Afghani stalls there in the market, you can buy bits of lapis lazuli because it comes from Afghanistan. So this lapis lazuli is the ground of the pure land in the West, Sukhavati, the land of bliss. And above that ground, the meditation continues for another 40 pages or so. I only gave you the very beginning of it. Above that ground, everything in the land starts to materialise. Glistening cords of gold crisscrossing the ground. Beautiful trees in groves, their leaves glittering with sparkles like dewdrops or diamonds. Brightly coloured birds singing in the branches. Oh.
I suddenly thought, what if I'm carrying it? And I was carrying it.
It's not wonderful. So, lapis lazuli has appeared by a miracle. Brought by a goddess. So look at that colour, isn't that beautiful? Yeah. Do you mind if I pass it around? So that's the colour of the ground. Brightly coloured birds singing in the branches, lofty towers, but these towers made of light beams, lakes adorned with beautiful water birds, and all the lakes are linked together by seven rushing rivers. And there, while you're there, according to the legend, you're able to learn the Dharma from everything that you experience, including the song of the birds. Hence the title of this talk, Bird Song Dharma. As you listen to the birds, you're hearing the truth. In fact, there's a Zen saying, isn't there? The wild bird teaches the truth. The wild bird teaches the truth. But not just in the birds, but the music that plays in the buildings, the sound of the rushing water in the rivers, all this is truth. It is truth that you can hear in your ears. And everywhere you look, you can see Buddhas teaching the Dharma. Maybe you see everybody there as a Buddha, in a way. So, this is the Pure Land, and the world that we're in now can be a Pure Land, can seem a Pure Land, as long as you look for these particular features in it. Beauty. You look for beauty. Be aware of beauty. Be open for beauty. Even when you're looking out the window of the tube train on the Hammersmith and City line and looking at the fences and the buildings and the gravel outside, just see the beauty in that. It's also rich, it's abundant, it's full of variety. It's very harmonious and symmetrical. It's very clear and radiant. So if you're in certain mental states, you'll find that is what the world is like. The world is a Pure Land. And the Pure Land represents ideal circumstances for practice. Being in nature with the Sangha, being here, listening to music, setting up ideal circumstances in your life. And on retreat, I would really recommend retreats, because there it's fairly easy at least to turn up for the meditations and do several meditations a day to find the Dharma is in the air. And the experiences you have if you're on retreat do often seem to teach you directly. You wake up in the morning and look out across the fields, and there's a hare running across the fields, and it tells you something. There's a message in it. Maybe you can't even put it in words, but there's significance in your experience. Or coming here in this centre, you know, you could use it as a Pure Land. Look for richness, look for beauty, look for clarity and harmony. And it's part of the practice, in a way, is to turn the world into a Pure Land. It's up to you to do it. And if you turn your world into a Pure Land, you're also influencing the world as other people experience it as well. The world that you're experiencing will be reflected, and other people will maybe find a little bit more joy in their lives as a result. Now, in Vaidehi's case, in the Queen's case, she'd given up on this awful world, and she thought only of the Pure Buddha Land, and she didn't live for very long after her son had killed her husband. And so for some people East Asia, the Pure Land is something they think of as something to go to after you die, you know, like Christians think of going to heaven. But is this the case? It's traditionally, this is not just a Western idea, it's traditionally regarded as something that can be right here and now. It's not something you wait until death to go to. And in fact, the great Zen teacher Hakuin, in his Song of Meditation, he says, "This very place, the lotus paradise, this very body, the Buddha." Those are sort of resounding phrases. It's worth listening to the whole poem, actually, but the end of the poem is that, "This very place, the lotus paradise, this very body, the Buddha." And he says elsewhere, you know, you seek it afar, but it is right here. It's like being in water and crying out for thirst, he says, you know. So that's all very well to say that, but how can I experience the lotus paradise qualities of this very place? What is it that the birds are singing as we listen to their song? And that reminds me, has anyone read Aldous Huxley's novel Island? You know, Aldous Huxley wrote, Brave New World, he wrote. But he also wrote another novel called Island, which is his sort of Buddhist novel in a way. And in this, there's a Pure Land, there's an island where everything is trying to make you aware. So the birds, the trees are full of minor birds. And these minor birds have all been taught, as soon as somebody walks through the trees, to go, "Be here now. Be here now." Or they say, what's the other thing they say? "Attention! Attention! Pay attention!" Or, "Here and now, boys! Here and now, boys!" Probably gets extremely irritating after a while. But it's interesting, isn't it? And I think probably Aldous Huxley probably had come across the concept of the Pure Land and had heard about the birds teaching the Dharma. And in a way, maybe we can take this literally. Bird song, the music from the instruments hanging in the trees, the sound of the rushing waters. They're all sounds, aren't they? And sounds are beautiful, but they can't be grasped. And they teach something. They teach the freshness of life. They teach impermanence. Impermanence can be a very beautiful, a very positive thing. Impermanence may seem threatening, but it's not. And that sound, even listening to the sound of a voice or the sound of the central heating, and realise how evanescent it is, how it changes all the time. Even the sound of the traffic. Try meditating on the sound of traffic rather than thinking the traffic is disturbing my meditation. Actually, let that sound be a teaching of the passage, the constant change of your experience, how it's never fixed. And the birds will always be singing, the water, the traffic will always be rushing by. All you need to do is be fully present in those experiences, and then you're with reality. And also, more esoterically, in the Pure Land, the Buddha is always present. So if you see the Pure Land clearly, you are the Buddha. It's as if you're looking into a mirror. This very body is the Buddha. So you can experience yourself as if you were a Buddha, and you can experience your surroundings as if they were a pure Buddha land, every sound being the Dharma. And then there's the Sangha, the third of the three jewels, the red one. And according to the Japanese-American Shin Buddhist scholar, Dr. N. Haneda, Shin Buddhism is a Pure Land form of Buddhism in Japan. The Pure Land itself is the Sangha. And this is also the way the Pure Land Sutra is described in Sangharakshita's work as well. The Pure Land is about the Sangha. That's the primary meaning of it. They're the Mahayana Sutras that describe the Sangha. So as soon as you find a living Sangha, it means that a community, that is, of people practicing, it means that your conditions have changed. The conditions of your practice have changed. Usually, the pulls and the demands of life tend to work against practice, or at least they seem to. You know, as Akasha Devi was saying, if only we didn't have to have a job. It's as if having to have a career and a job feels like it's pulling against our practice. But if you're in the Sangha, if you can find a living Sangha, then at least when you're with them, practice becomes natural. And in order not to practice, you have to actively resist it, which sometimes you will, but you have to actively resist it. So this means that, according to another great sutra, the Vimalakirti Sutra, a bodhisattva, someone destined for enlightenment, a bodhisattva builds a pure land out of bodhisattvas. You build the pure land, you make the pure land, you create the pure land, not just in your imagination, not just by going on retreat, but by bringing a sangha together. The pure land is made of people, in other words. Living together, working together, and practicing together. And so this means that the best way to create a pure land is to build sangha. And sangha, like here, sangha isn't something that any one person can make happen. It's not a load of people sitting at the feet of some wonderful teacher. Sangha is community. It's something equal. It's something where everybody is involved and everybody is independently making their own contribution and making their own mind up. And according to the Buddha, the best way to create sangha is through the four essentials of partnership, or the four sangha vastus, which I'm not going to go into detail with, but they're well worth studying. These are ways in which people will come into harmony with each other. And the Buddha said, the first thing you need to do is to be generous, is a process of giving. Giving is what puts you in contact with other people. Just even in just a really small way. Priscilla's example of finding that lapis lazuli, remembering it, and letting us all look at it. There's a little act of generosity. And that's, I don't know, but that brings us together, having that stone passing around. The second one is kind speech. So it's not enough just to, well, it is enough actually, it's great just to be generous. But then you build up a two-way connection by being involved in conversation, but a conversation which is kind. The third one is beneficial activity, which means acting in ways that fulfill the aims of others. Artacharya means aim action, or action for the good, artacharya. So acting in beneficial ways, actually spotting something that somebody needs and really helping them out with that. And then finally, empathy, a deep understanding shared with others, realizing we share a common vision, we share common needs and common aims. So they're progressively deeper, they're progressively more subtle, these four ways of connecting people. They forge connections, they build sangha. That's the way to do it. So this is the way you make the meditation on the Pure Land into something real and concrete. It affects your life because it makes you want to make a Pure Land by building sangha. So let's go back to the meditation. So you remember what we've looked at so far. I've described it, the rivers, the towers made of light, the birds singing, the Dharma, you know, the ponds. There's lots of lotuses about as well. There's the lapis lazuli ground crossed with gold. And next, we've got to go to see more than the Buddha land and to see the Buddha Amida himself in the meditation, the great golden Buddha. Absolutely enormous. So if you looked up into the sky, he would fill the whole sky. But yet, you wouldn't be quite sure if, is it because he's really close, or is it because he's a million miles away, but is really vast? You can't tell. And on one side of him is the bodhisattva of compassion, and on the other side of him is the bodhisattva of energy. So we have on one side of him Avalokiteshvara, or Guanyin in China, the bodhisattva of compassion. On the other side, a bodhisattva who's a form of Vajrapani, the bodhisattva of energy. So this is to do with bringing the Buddha to mind. And the sutra explains, and it says, If you can see the Buddha, you can be the Buddha. If you can see the Buddha, you can be the Buddha. But seeing is maybe the wrong word, because visualization, it's lovely if you do find it clear and bright, but it doesn't matter if it isn't. It's to do with a feeling of presence. Then the Buddha teaches the next step to Vaidehi, which is not just to see the land, not just to see the Buddha, but to say the name of the Buddha. The magic spell here is to utter the Buddha's name. This is very important, and it becomes the central practice in Pure Land Buddhism, is uttering the Buddha's name, the mantra. So he's not just a visual form, he's a vocal form, a conceptual form. And the mantra you were doing is Om Amideva Hri, Om Amideva Hri. But the mantra in the sutra is different, actually. In Sanskrit, it's Om Namo Amitabhaya. And in Chinese transcription, it becomes Namo Amito Fu. So if you listen to the chanting, I've probably got the pronunciation wrong, but if you listen to the chanting in a Chinese temple, very often they'll be doing that. Namo Amito Fu. Fu is the Chinese for the word Buddha. Amito or Amida is the Chinese for Amitabha. Namo means I salute. So homage to the Buddha. Or in Japanese, it's Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida Butsu. And again, you'll hear that recited over and over again in Japanese temples. And then finishing the sutra, the Buddha says that if you visualize the land clearly, if you say the name of Amida, you'll find yourself gradually emerging into that land, like emerging from the middle of a lotus flower. For some people, they burst out of the lotus flower in a shower of petals. For some people, they sit for many years incubating inside the lotus flower. And this is the theme of the last part of the sutra, about the different kinds of people and how long they spend inside their lotuses. So it's rather nice, isn't it? So it can take a while. Your practice, your realization, your inspiration, it can take a while to percolate in and have an effect. But don't give up hope. You're quite on. So that's the sutra. The Pure Land means good conditions. It means beauty. It means a sangha. It means reality seen right here and now. The landscape of the Pure Land, it doesn't have to be jewel trees. It can be your own favourite landscape. The plants, the animals, the birds, the sound, the water, and so on. The clothing of the Buddha, the favourite bodhisattva, the red colour of the sangha. So let's just finish by imagining the sun sinking. You go away from the world of the senses and you go into your own mind, where the sound of the mantra can fill the universe, and you're with the Buddha of meditation, Amida.